to me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Today, we're going to take a look at the latest on health and healing. Then, we're going to spend a lot of time looking at the case of Julian Assange, who was arrested last night at the Ecuadorian embassy by British police, and will be whisked off to the United States, where he has a very good probability of spending the rest of his life in prison. What are his crimes? Well, what are they? We're going to explore that. We believe the people who should be in prison aren't and won't be, and the people who have been in prison for telling the truth about crimes against humanity shouldn't have been. You'll be hearing from Julian Assange in his own words, and then we will have a commentary on it as well. Also today, some evidence that will completely prove, that CNN was engaged in a cover-up and lying to the American public. We have absolute irrefutable proof that they were part of staging activities in Syria. This was brought forward and parroted by Anderson Cooper and others. And we're going to expose it, first people, today on this show. Then we're going to go to our audio files today and take a look at 5G and some other topics I believe are important for us. On your memory yesterday, I said before we say that the worst president in American history, I believe that there's a whole lot that could vie for that position, is Donald Trump. Understand something, that had anyone else been elected, except for the Independent and Green Party and Justice candidates, then we would have a whole new day. But any of the other corporatists been elected, you would not know who the deep state are. You'd be told that you're just a conspiracy theorist, that you're a fool. You have no credibility. And yet, we have methodically documented, and it will be brought out in a two-hour special in the next 2 weeks, probably on the Progressive Commentary Hour, that virtually every single administration, we're talking about Reagan, Ford, George Bush Sr., Bill Clinton, Jr., Obama, and Trump, every major position, they put a corporatist to run their agencies, to do their thinking for them, to come up with the policies that they would then, through their charm in some cases, like Obama and Clinton, very likable people, very personable, that they would be able to sell these policies. And then when there were people in office that the corporate state did not like, the very same exact policies, like building the wall. Clinton said it, Hillary and Bill both, and Obama said it. The same exact wall, the same exact funding, including more, $25 billion under Chuck Schumer, but then they're all opposed to the wall. Well, I'm for allowing every single human being that deserves to be in the United States to come in, providing they understand this is America, we have certain values, and will they make every effort to assimilate in so they can have a future being respected, and we can know that we have another citizen, as we had throughout our history, contributing to the commons and the greater good. None of this is being considered. It's all politicized. As a result, you see the cages that Obama built and Trump filled, and the stupidity of a wall instead of what I suggested yesterday. You don't need a wall whatsoever. And contrary to Sean Hannity, others, walls don't keep people out. Instead, what you have is you want the right people in. Why don't we reverse the psychology of this? Who would we really benefit having into our country? And then what is necessary to facilitate their coming in without being denigrated, giving them protection, helping them with disease, helping them find work that does not displace other Americans, and making that transition viable, then put 100 entry points and just have 300-foot tower, not a tower, but a pole with the kind of cameras that they have in satellites, so that every single thing moving for 1,600 miles, 1,350, but 1,600, go clear across, you will see. You don't need a wall for that. And then you have drones in between, and then you have relay stations. So if someone's coming across illegally and you have 100 places that come across legally, why are they coming across illegally? Why? Why not just do it legally if we made it doable? So we have to have a whole new mindset about our immigration policies. Now both sides have weaponized their position. Hence, reason, logic, and fairness, both to Americans who want to be able to benefit from someone coming in this society, as they have, and not denigrated. Remember Little Italy? Remember Germantown on the Upper East Side around 86th Street and 1st and 2nd Avenue? Remember Chinatown? Remember Little Korea? Remember the Orchard Street and the Jewish community downtown? They weren't there because they were invited to assimilate in. They were there because of prejudice and bias against each one. Every single group that's come in the United States has been biased and prejudiced against. Isn't it time we learn some lessons of civility, spiritual qualities, trust? We just haven't learned a whole lot, and we're certainly not in a position to learn today. So I think we're going to have some conversations on this topic. And also, let me just give you one example. And by the way, I have over 400 examples. We have found 400 corporatists who now can say on the resume, I was the Secretary of Interior, I was Secretary of Treasury, I was the all coming from corporate greedy interest places. It's not just Trump. But why all the anger at Trump? Well, there's a lot of good reasons, because he's a functional illiterate. Because even a four-year-old would be frustrated with his lack of articulation and speaking in one syllable and repetitious. He's just the easiest one to manipulate. I thought George Bush Jr. was. They're both about the same. They would both lose to each other in an intellectual arm wrestling match. So who then was behind all these people? Isn't it important we see how the system actually works instead of pretending that because we like someone or they look presidential, what an oxymoron that is. Let's vote for that person. They look godlike. They look like the real woman, the real man, the real athlete. These are just metaphors of disdain for anything other than the preconceived delusions of what our own unrequited imagination has put forth. One example today to start the show. There's two pictures of a person, and his name is Michael Taylor. They look the same. Two pictures. I posted this on my Facebook this morning. Here's the difference. On the left side is Michael Taylor, Vice President of Monsanto. In my opinion, the most corrupt, evil company in America in its history. But that's just me. That's my opinion. Now, that Monsanto is a company that poisons just about everything that you consume with glyphosate and Roundup, etc. But on the right is the other Michael Taylor, the current Deputy Commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, the agency that is supposed to protect us from companies like Monsanto. Now, wrap your mind around that. Two people or two companies represented at different times by the same person. Where's their loyalty? Then look at the policies when he was running the FDA. So that's what we're dealing with. So that is where we're at right now. And I'm going to go further into this as we go on into our new shows. Now, let's go to the latest on health and nutrition. And the reason I'm doing this is simple, because I've never seen a time in American history where everything has been weaponized against the American public. Everything. Our media, left and right, the corporate parties, left and right, the banking system, the energy systems, the agricultural systems, the educational systems, everything has been weaponized. And the average poor American is caught in the middle. Mandatory vaccines and punishment by being jailed. And guess what? Remember I told you? I told you 2 years ago. Mark my words, I said, that if California is able to mandate all these vaccines for children, next will be adults. Well, guess what? The very same people who said children must be given these mandatory vaccines are now suggesting let's get legislation to mandate vaccines for adults, and they cannot have exclusions. That means you're either forcibly vaccinated or you're jailed. That is what's coming right now as we're speaking. So you see why I'm focusing on these issues now and putting a lot of energy into it and research. On health and nutrition, from the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, publishing an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association, they're saying that there are very positive effects of vitamin D in cancers of the digestive tract. This is just yesterday. There were two trials that revealed benefits of vitamin D supplementation in the treatment of digestive system cancers. We've known this for decades. I remember a conversation I had in Washington, D.C. with a former director of the National Cancer Institute, and I felt it was a, at that time, I felt he was a very decent human being. The reason he agreed to interview with me is because I had asked Dr. Dean Burke, one of the founders of the National Cancer Institute and one of its senior researchers, would he make an introduction, and he did. And I said, why all the emphasis upon chemotherapy at this time when there's so many natural studies from your own National Cancer Institute on vitamin A and D and C? And he said, you're right. He said, we've done a lot of good work here, but it's not like I have a great say-so in it. I said, yeah, but you're the director. He said, you have to understand how big it is and how many different people who have political connections and economic connections actually supersede my input. So all those decades later, that was in the 1970s, here we have people receiving 4,000 units of vitamin D3 a day, and for 13 months, a progression-free survival compared to 11 months for those who were given the standard dose of 400 units. Quote, to our knowledge, this study is the first completed randomized clinical trial of vitamin D supplements for treating advanced or metastatic colorectal cancer. It identifies a cost-effective, safe, and easily accessible agent as a potential new treatment for metastatic colorectal cancer, end quote. Now, why did I find this important? Because, and this was against the placebo, and that's because some of you may remember. In fact, some of you may have attended. It was at the Grand Ballroom at the Waldorf Astoria. I invited seven individuals, Dr. Ellis, for example, the Shute brothers from Canada. If you had invented, or not invented, if you had discovered a vitamin and shown that that vitamin was important in health, you were invited. Those were the seven speakers. And at that conference, we had Albert Senjorgi, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering ascorbic acid, though he really wasn't the first person. He's the one who got the credit for it, talking about vitamin C and its multiple applications. But the most interesting speaker at that conference were the Shute brothers. There were two brothers, Evan and Wilford Shute. And they were talking about why all the scientific literature showed that vitamin E had no benefit, really didn't do much of anything. And they said because they're using it at very low doses. They then provided 3,000 monographs of showing photographs and blood workups and medical reports of what happens when they started using 1,000 to 3,000 units of vitamin E per day. on patients, reversing all forms of gangrene. Gangrene was the one that really impressed me that day. Do you know it would be another 20 years before someone decided to really venture and take a risk and instead of using 30 units of vitamin D, E, use 200? And they began to get some results. Then someone else used 400, and they got remarkable results. And people were stunned. 400 units of vitamin E, that's a huge amount of vitamin, that's a megadose. Today, I don't even start the people I'm counseling at 400. It's so low. So you see, the shoots were right. And think of all the lives that could have been saved and conditions improved had science and the medical community been open. Just like Dean Burke, way back then, said that we're using too low a doses on cancer for these nutrients, but the chemotherapy people won. So if you have a choice today of treating a disease like pain and using cayenne or cat's claw or turmeric versus a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, if you're the average person, you're going to do what the doctor says or the pharmacist and take a painkiller that could kill you. And so we're not using the right doses. That's the whole purpose of that, and it's a new study. Also, I like the Natural Blaze, and if you've never gone to its site, do so. They're good people. They do good work. And they published an article about school replaced detention with meditation, and it created incredible results. Now think of that for a moment. So what good does detention do? What does it actually resolve? Unless someone learns a lesson from it. And how much do we know about the negative outcomes from negative behavior? So shouldn't there be a way of finding new approaches to actually help students become better than they are without impacting their self-esteem? But in a school, the Robert W. Coleman School brought about a change in their detention method, and it was a grand success. Now, we have a lot of teachers listening and principals and school administrators because I've communicated with you. I've met you. So please take this to heart. They look for help in the ancient Hindu practice of meditation. The school introduced mindful meditation, a room, in February 2016, and the meditation was used to calm and help students deal with anxiety and stress, thereby disciplining their mental thoughts. This method was introduced through a wonderful partnership with the Holistic Life Foundation, and the school chose to break tradition, and it seemed like a risky move. The question was, would it work? Well, it turns out it did work. The suspension rates in the school were lowered significantly. Some of the students have mentioned how the program changed their lives. For example, if they were taking a test, they would just start taking deep breaths. In the midst of the noise, they would meditate to tune out all the noise and become one with themselves. And the best part, it actually helped them to build their character. One of the students recalled that in the middle of a conflict with their parents, they were about to lose their cool when they remembered the breathing techniques. And after breathing in and out, the anger was gone. Now that might actually be the best conflict resolution ever. Let's face it, we need to change in our detention system. We need to completely eradicate our entire prison system, except for those who are known to be extremely violent and choose not to change. The vast majority of people incarcerated, 40%, are innocent. The Innocent Project and others have proven that. And we have to have a way of expunging their records and allowing them to return to life. And because they were wrongfully convicted, we, the people, are responsible. The juries who falsely convicted them, the judges and prosecutors should be ashamed of themselves. And we should help those people get back into life. And we should follow Norway or the Netherlands. Do you know the Netherlands has closed down so many prisons that they only have a small number open, and then there, the prisoner has the keys to their jail, and they go in and out when they want. They can go off and meet with their family, and they have classes every day, These are mentor classes. They have to contend with the issues that got them in trouble, understand how they got into trouble, what that meant to everyone else in society, and how selfish it was not to think of the consequences of your actions. And they have one of the most tremendous outcomes in the world, and hence is one of the safest societies in the world. We have learned nothing because we have, once again, we've weaponized the judicial system for not giving bail, so people who are completely innocent won't have a chance to prove it. They'll frequently plead out just so that they can have, you know, 3 months in jail or 6 months in jail and get out rather than stay for 2 years, as one person on Rikers Island did, and then committed suicide because they couldn't afford bail. What kind of society does that? A stupid, vulgar, vile society. We need a change in our detention system. We need a change that actually helps prisoners, helps convicts, and helps those who want to leave gangs and give up on some bad habits. Well, finally, from a Adhikari hospital in India, published in the British Medical Journal, Complementary and Alternative Medicine, comes a study about something I mentioned last week, the Indian gooseberry, G-O-O-S-E-B-E-R-R-Y. Why? Because it is one way you can lower very high cholesterol. It's that simple. In the study, the researchers from India examined the efficacy of the Indian gooseberry in individuals with a form of lipidemia, and which is one of the most common risk factors for developing atherosclerosis and heart disorders, and having elevated triglycerides and cholesterol. And they gave 500 milligrams, that's a half a gram, of the Indian gooseberry extract, that's not a lot, or a placebo, twice a day for 12 weeks. And they found that the gooseberry brought down the cholesterol levels markedly. And that's important. Help maintain blood sugar levels. That's important. So, Indian gooseberry is terrific. And unlike statin drugs, that are not. Oh, one last thing. Harvard School of Public Health today released a study published in the journal Circulation that substituting a healthy plant protein for red meat lowers your risk of heart disease. That's an important study. Not the first, by the way. There are hundreds. But then I also read from University of Eastern Finland another study today that showed that a diet rich in animal protein, there's your steak and hamburgers and chicken, is associated with a greater risk of death. That's correct. Let me explain it one last time. A diet rich in animal protein and meat, in particular, is not good for you on any level. And if you start eating this on a regular basis, over a 20-year period, you had a greater opportunity to die. And this was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. 23% greater risk of death because you were eating meat. Wow, that's just one item increases your risk of dying 23%. What about if you drank? What about if you didn't exercise? What about if you didn't deal with stress properly? What if you weren't in a healthy relationship? What if you had nutrient deficiencies? Yeah, this was 2,600 men, and they were followed for 20 years. So two strikes against meat, which means two favorable points for a vegan plant-based diet. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about aging gracefully. A new study identifies what allows people to keep their memory at any age. It's a study from the University of Alberta, but it's a long study, and I'll deal with that tomorrow. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about Julian Assange. Joining me on the line will be Richard Gale, and he was here yesterday sharing a lot of information. By the way, we were flooded, I'm not in New York, I'm on location, but I was told that we had so many calls coming in from the Orthodox Jewish community in Brooklyn that we couldn't handle them all. So just remember, we have for you. We have 52 studies, fully referenced. And we're not talking about opinion pieces. We're talking about scholarly studies showing the lack of efficacy or safety in vaccines. We specifically showed you that what was wrong with the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, the one they want to mandate, and that there's no science behind it. It's actually very dangerous. So it's time that the people stood up and shouted down the politicians. Because if they're going to mandate that we will arrest you, and yet look at the actual signed, the judge's signature there, it's imprisonment also. So now they can take your child or you into custody. They can forcibly inject aborted fetal cells and formaldehyde, polysorbate 80, mercury or aluminum into your body without your permission. That's fascism. That's Nazism. That's how far down the rabbit hole we've gone. And yet people will go through their day and not give a damn about any of it until the adult mandate comes. And then they will. And then we will say to them, you were not there because of your own self-absorbed, selfish, narcissistic, punk-ass, crappy little life, you millennial. Now, who's going to be there for you when you chose to be there for no one except your cell phone and your fake friends? See how that comes at you. We deal with reality here. Back in a moment. I'd like to welcome you. I'm Gary Nall. Joining us on the line right now is Richard Gale. Richard, last night, Julian Assange was arrested. He is, for all intents and purposes, been kept captive in the embassy. And now that the new president of the country has been working, as it turns out, in association with the Trump administration, we also found out last night, the world does not yet know this, but I watched the press conference where Assange's lawyers showed that hundreds of thousands of photographs and video and audio of every single moment that he's been in that embassy was taken, and they tried to extort the Assange legal team, saying, give us $3 million, we've been offered $9 million, and we'll let you have all this. And he looked at all of it. It was a place in Spain. And so what it meant was that every conversation he had with his lawyers, filmed — that's, by the way, that goes against all laws — and every visitor he had, every conversation he had, every telephone call he had, every piece of correspondence he had, every single inch he was secretly filmed in. They had cameras hidden everywhere. This is in the Ecuadorian embassy. Shame on those punks for doing that. But in today's world, the punks are winning. And now that is something that's not in any of the news. I wanted to share that with you, but I saw that last night. Tell us about Julian Assange's situation and why the American media, the very sources that benefited from his exposés and his leaked documents, are not coming to his aid.
Yes, Gary. Interesting. I didn't hear about that in that report about the surveillance of him the entire for these all those years that he was in. He is the world's most famous political refugee in many respects. But I wasn't aware of all the surveillance that had taken place. But that is part of what he's exposed throughout all these years in trying to improve journalistic integrity and real in-depth investigations to expose just the corruption of the deep state over the years. This is actually what he's been warning about. And when I was, before coming on the air, I was thinking about what would our world or even just our nation be like right now if we were not aware of all the different leaks that WikiLeaks had brought forth over the years. We would largely be held so much in the dark. We would not be aware of the CIA's discovery of all the vulnerabilities in Google and Apple and Microsoft that enabled the CIA and intelligence agencies to be able to spy on citizens just through our mobile phones, through if you have a Samsung television, if your television is even turned off, they could still be monitoring and spying on you. These are all the, there's so many different important stories that WikiLeaks has been able to bring to the public, and it's done so with a great deal of integrity, because what they've done is to enable a platform for whistleblowers, and they prefer not to even know the identity of whistleblowers. Julian Assange, during a TED talk, said if they have a sense of who that person might be that is exposing or providing different internal documents showing wrongdoing, that they immediately will destroy that information. They don't want to know who the whistleblowers are, but they want to bring that information to the general public. You know, John Pilger has called this a real warning to all journalists, and Edward Snowden has come out and said this is probably one of the darkest moments in press freedom and journalistic integrity. So I can share some of the stories. We might forget some of the stories that WikiLeaks is exposed. He, on one hand, there was the famous case of the Apache helicopter attack that was brought forth, and it was a horrifying video showing 15 people, including two Reuters journalists, just being shot dead by U.S. Army helicopter gunmen. And, you hear the voices of the Army crew in the helicopter, just light them up, you know, keep on shooting, keep on shooting. And these are just innocent people. There was a time, and we were reporting on it back, 2013, when the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement was, negotiations were undergoing, and nobody had any idea what was in this. It was WikiLeaks that managed to expose or to bring to the public the draft text of the intellectual property charter of the TPP. There is the famous global intelligence files that WikiLeaks brought forth in 2012 that showed how the private intelligence firm Stratfor, which has contracts with all of our major intelligence agencies, was targeting individuals for corporate and government clients. The Afghan war diary, these were thousands and thousands of documents that were exposed showing giving details of individual incidents of friendly fire and civilian casualties. The CIA was discovered that by murdering Taliban leaders, it would further radicalize the militants. And the Obama administration had decided to ignore this advice and continue with unleashed targeted killings. And that was when the insurgency grew. But WikiLeaks was the one that presented this for us. And it's not even just they're not just exposing the failures in our own government and the own corruption in the United States. They're covering world issues as well. They released a lot of uncensored videos of the civil unrest in Tibet, for example, which the Chinese government was censoring and not allowing out, just really showing the worst of the crimes the Chinese were doing on the Tibetans. So they don't limit themselves just to Europe and the U.S. Of course, there was all the emails, the John Podesta emails, the chairman of Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign that provided all the insights into the inner workings of the Clinton administration, and the Democratic National Committee files that showed that there was a concerted effort to be able by the DNC to denigrate and disparage Senator Bernie Sanders in order to advance Hillary's position during the primaries. And there's so many different ones that we could go on. I think some of the most important ones are really the documents, the 8,000 documents about hacking and surveillance. This is some of the most important information, because this is what affects every American citizen today, and how the CIA was cooperating with British intelligence in order to find ways to engineer to compromise our smartphones, our smart televisions, using different kinds of improvised surveillance devices. And we also discovered at that time was that the CIA headquarters in Langley had a second covert headquarters that was based in the U.S. Consul in Frankfurt to cover all of Europe and Middle East, as well as another one called Weeping Angel, that was another agency that was looking at how to hack cars in order to crash them and so that assassinations could not be detectable. They uncovered and released all the secret Bibles of Scientology. That was another one. They were the ones that brought forth all the reports of the secret meetings of the Bilderberg Group that included the group's history and showing their strategic agenda that they had for corporate hegemony. We would not have known about what the Stutnik's computer worm. That the Israelis, when they infiltrated the Iranian nuclear facility, almost causing a very severe nuclear accident in Iran, those reports in 2009 came out with the WikiLeaks as well. More recent ones, there hasn't been a lot of activity from WikiLeaks over the recent years, of course, because of Julian Assange having been curtailed in the embassy, and there's been just kind of a migration of a lot of the journalists. There's no funding for them, so it's a skeleton group that still kind of holds on to the WikiLeaks mission. The last report was really just the CIA espionage orders into the 2012 French presidential election. So that was the last one that was done.
Neil, let's take a moment and hear some comments from Julian Assange himself. So it's short. It's only about a 2-minute clip.
Yes.
It's been reported that WikiLeaks, your baby, has in the last few years has released more classified documents than the rest of the world's media combined. Can that possibly be true?
Yeah, can it possibly be true? It's a worry, isn't it, that the rest of the world's media is doing such a bad job that a little group of activists is able to release more of that type of information than the rest of the world press combined.
How does it work? How do people release the documents, and how do you secure their privacy?
Well, so these are, as far as we can tell, classical whistleblowers. And we have a number of ways for them to get information to us. So we use this state-of-the-art encryption to bounce stuff around the internet to hide trails, pass it through legal jurisdictions like Sweden and Belgium to enact those legal protections. We get information in the mail, the regular postal mail, encrypted or not, vet it like a regular news organization, format it, which is sometimes something that's quite hard to do when you're talking about giant databases of information, release it to the public, and then defend ourselves against the inevitable legal and political attacks.
So you make an effort to ensure the documents are legitimate, but you actually almost never know who the identity of the source is.
That's right.
Is.
Yeah, very, very rarely do we ever know. And if we find out at some stage, then we destroy that information as soon as possible.
Big Brother exerting more control, more secrecy, or us watching Big Brother, or it's just all to be played for either way?
I'm not sure which way it's going to go. I mean, there's enormous pressures to harmonize freedom of speech legislation and transparency legislation around the world, within the EU, between China, United States. Which way is it going to go? It's hard to see. That's why it's a very interesting time to be in, because with just a little bit of effort, we can shift it one way or the other.
Okay, that was Julian Assange. Richard, finally this. Last evening, I had a chance to watch a new short documentary called The Veto. And it's by someone we've had on the show many times before anyone else. We challenged, as this audience will remember, we challenged the White House, we challenged Amy Goodman, we challenged CNN, we challenged the entire stupidity of the Academy for voting best short documentary to the White Helmets. We had evidence they were a criminal organization. They were a terrorist organization. So they supported terrorism. But the media wouldn't have it, nor would all the celebrities, nor the so-called corporate leftists and Democrats. Oh, they used everything they could because it justified continuing regime change against Assange. Against Assange.
Well, we've been reporting on the Syrian situation, and as you said, Vanessa Bealey and also the other one, the Canadian journalist we've had on quite a bit, who's also was kind of undercover, freelance journalist in Syria, Eva Bartlett was the other person, woman we had on the show, covering all these stories. This is also all related to what, all the different things that Assange has been bringing out and showing to us. And if we paid attention to a lot of these documents, releases that WikiLeaks has done, it should not come as a surprise to us. We've seen how the mainstream media is so much aligned and goose-step with our intelligence agencies to be able
it's
to
sickening.
Get their message across.
It's sickening. Richard, we should all join together today to protest the arrest of Julian Assange. We should stand together, especially those of us who are real, legitimate journalists. We should be in protest of this, and we should continue to remind the public that with more than 10 million documents that he uncovered, never once was he shown in a single document to be inaccurate. So we're a society today and a media today that prides itself on arresting and punishing and destroying people who expose corruption and protecting those who are the corruptors. That's how bad it is. We're going to complete our show today by going back to the next part of Dr. Graham Downing talking about all of the different problems with 5G, not just the problems to your body, but what it means about our freedoms and what they're willing to do to us and why we should pay careful attention.
Okay, this is where they're pushing this. They started to push all this with documents many, many years ago. I'm not going to get too much into this. This is all from published literature, and it all came about equality. Everyone's got to be equal. No, I've got no problem with equality. I couldn't give a damn what race, gender you are, as long as you're a decent person. But that was just the beginning, and they knew where they were going to take this, because they're then going to take into social equity and equity of outcome. Equity of outcome means everybody has to have an equal outcome. Okay, you can't earn more than someone else. You can't have more energy than someone else. You're all going to live in the same size house. There's documents demonstrating this. Don't have time to get into it. But to be fair, you have to have equity. All these things have to be equal. The amount of children you have. If you look at how this ideology, and it is an ideology, has been used before in the history of this planet, that also goes down to what your beliefs are and what you can say. And I think you just said someone was just gagged wanting to speak about certain things. So everything must be monitored. This is the reason why you're having so-called smart technology. The Fitbits, the things that go on you. Everything's got to be on it. You're just being teased with this stuff at the moment. You have to kind of understand where this is going to go. And that means you can't have privacy, okay? Privacy is gone, okay, according to these people, whoever these are or they are. And isn't it interesting how things are just moving along at the same thing? Suddenly we're watching lots of programs about people being watched. Yeah, we're kind of warmed up to this. Loads of programs about kids being watched, adults being watched, whatever it is. And now you've got, and then Amazon Echo comes out, and suddenly, isn't it great? I'm not bothered about having a microphone in my house that's recording everything I say, and is selling it on to third-party people. Can you imagine anyone here who's above a certain age, 20 years ago, 25, 30 years ago, anyone said, I'm going to put a microphone in your house, and you would have gone, you've got to be crazy. Okay, that you talk to younger people today, no disrespect to anyone here that is more informed. Isn't it interesting that the head of Apple was really pushing these cars, this whole kind of car automotive technology, and you've got Uber, share your car. Airbnb, share your house. Isn't it interesting how this technology, these ideas are coming in? Autonomy requires privacy. And the psychological papers are very clear. You don't have privacy, you've got no autonomy. This way of framing the issue makes sense if you understand privacy solely as political or legal concept, and its political importance is certainly part of what makes privacy so important. What is private is what is yours alone to control and without interference from others or the state. But the concept of privacy also matters for another deeper reason. It is intimately connected to what it is to be an autonomous person. The connection between loss of privacy and dehumanization is a well-known and ancient fact. You cannot be persuaded to give up your privacy. This technology is part of doing that. Anyone like this guy? He's calling for universal basic income. He thinks he's got a church, and he's the head of it, no doubt. Here's another guy from the Basic Income Earth Network, just to show you how this social side is changing. We need to create this new connected culture. Everything's going to be connected. We need to drive us to compete for social contribution. If you understand your history, you know what he's really talking about. To achieve that, many people will need to undergo training. So you haven't got a job, you go on basic income, and now they're going to train you as educators and community organizers to create and maintain a positive social climate. I recommend that a basic income will not come by itself, rather it be coupled with socio-educational training. You're talking about 5G, but you're talking about a much bigger thing. China's already on it. They've got something called the social, who's heard of the social credit system? You're scored, almost like a Facebook liking system. When you say what the government wants you to say, you're given a plus point. When you're not, you're given a negative point. You get enough negative points, you're gone. Once you lose trust, once they lose trust in you, this is how they say it, you're never allowed back in the system. I think at the moment, Ian, I don't know the data on it, but it's between what, 11 and 13 million Chinese people have been put in the sin bin, which means you don't travel, you're now blocked from travel. This is all, I'm gonna tell you here and now, this is a template for what's gonna come here. Okay, in my opinion, from what I've seen. When we look here at 5G, this is China. China's really pushing this. And also they're pushing this along the Silk Road. They're pushing this in Africa, their technology. And they need 5G to step their system up. They're massively a template now for what's going to go on in the rest of the world. This is a professor. We've already created the blueprint for innovative cyborg tissue and recently shown how to mingle this in the brain. They give you an injection into the head, opens a mesh, and that connects your brain up to the internet. It's already up and going and is being very well tolerated. This guy is one of the leading chemists in the world, so if you think this is conspiracy, you're absolutely wrong. This is what they're doing. They're connecting the brains of animals together. The animals can be thousands of miles apart, and they start to work as one, almost like a biological computer. This is a template for what they want to do with humans. Here's another guy, he's another UK professor. Personal computing will become intrapersonal and intracellular. Each human neuron will be hijacked by a self-growing, self-repairing molecular network. Computers will be networks of polymer filaments grown inside together with a human. Seeds of the networks will be injected into embryos in the first month of their development, and they will form a gigantic network inside the brain. Computers will be inside us. They will span all living creatures in a united computing network. If that doesn't turn your stomach, you're not a human being. Now, these are scientists. This is where this is going. This is how this is developing. It requires 5G. This is a book called The Scientific Conquest of Death, and this is a chapter by a guy called Ray Kurzweil, who's the head of DeepMind for Google. And he says, it will be routine practice to have billions of nanobots coursing through the capillaries of your brains, communicating with each other, as well with our biological neurons and with the internet. One application would provide full immersion into virtual reality. And if you didn't understand that, basically he says he's going to plug your brain into the internet by 2030. Now you need to understand these are the very, very serious players. They require 5G to do this as well. Rolling Stone done an interview on him. He wants to use his technology to bring his dead father back to life. You have to understand what these people are about. These people are setting the course for your future. Other people have got more common sense. In his book, A Post-Human Future, because this is what they're talking about. They're taking this technology and going beyond human. Post-human, transhuman. Okay, this is where they're pushing all this. There's lots of things he says. But effectively, if you've got an elite who are transhuman and you've got normal humans who just want to live their life, you've got a problem. Not everyone can or wants to receive the same level of enhancement. Haven't got time to get into what those enhancements are, but they've got them. For example, having a mesh put in your head, human rights may be threatened. And the same issue of superiority would apply to the question of inequality. Some people might not be able to afford it. And the reality is what he's saying is, if you look to history, you look to nature, what happens when you get a superior species? What does it do to the inferior species? It subjugates it or removes it. And at the highest level, they're talking about the human race being removed by this technology, by AI. This technology is so advanced, it is absolutely frightening. This was the 9th conference. We're on the 11th conference. Beyond humanism, okay? This is why they're rolling this 5G out. There's a whole thing behind this, okay? It's not just simple 5G. Down at the bottom, they're talking about it. What it's also worth noting, this is seriously discussed, is the formation of new cultures and societies which consist of non-human subjects mingling with humans or forming their own separate and previously unseen worlds. They're talking about the new AI brains, okay? The new AI things that are coming in. Who's heard of synths? They're building synths now, okay, which is a kind of synthetic human, okay, to be powered and to be embodied with this this alleged kind of consciousness, which is from an artificial intelligence. I'm just very going to quickly wrap this up. I don't have time to get into this, but 5G is central to all this. Is I'm showing you documentation. This isn't conspiracy, okay? This is scientific documentation, whether you're aware of it or not. This is a very, very, these people I believe they're insane, but you know, hopefully I'm not the only one on this planet who believes that. I'm going to show you now a clip. I played it before. Some of you may see it. This guy you're going to hear is Gordy Rose. He is the developer with a company of quantum computers. Quantum computers are used by NASA. His computers are used by NASA and Google and others to develop the AI technology, the AI thing that's going to be in this new synth bodies, okay, this kind of consciousness. These computers already connect outside of this dimension with 2 to the 500 power dimensions. That's from their white papers and their literature. 2 to the 500 power dimensions they connect. And he's talking about using this intelligence from these dimensions in these machines to bring them to life. Now, this is actually for real. This is not a joke. And this is him speaking. Listen very carefully. Okay, so 5G is a component of this. This is what you need to understand. That's the leading guy in the world. NASA has his computer. This is not a raving lunatic down the pub talking to you. Now, there's a lot more to talk on that. I haven't got time. But you need to understand something. 5G is one of the final nails in the coffin before AI comes in. And when AI comes in, people have heard me say this before. Yes, there are good aspects of it. But the reality is, I've looked at this in great detail, far more than I can go into today. And I do not see the human race surviving this down the line. I really do not, okay? And I'm sorry to put a downer on a Saturday night and tell you that, but you do need to understand, and I urge you to research and look at this for yourself. I'm quite happy to take questions afterwards. I think you're gonna hear from Mark. This has gone a little bit longer than I planned. Anyway, thank you for listening to me, and hopefully it was worth coming down today. Thank you.
This shows you where we're going, and they wouldn't be talking about it unless we were already there. It's now going to be implemented, and it's already started. You'll see the commercials, but you won't see anything we just discussed. You only see how it makes everything faster, how it brings everything together. I'll be doing several programs on transhumanism and artificial intelligence on nearby shows. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Knoll. We'll be back tomorrow.